Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Lenny, how you doing?
Dave, lovely to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well. Let's just get it right. Wednesday nights, RT1, around 9:30, 9:25 to 10. You get two episodes at a time. Opens with the two of them like being introduced, the two girls. And then there's a kind of an open mic poetry night thing. They meet Melissa, they go back home, they meet the fourth guy. Is that what we're going to get over the next bunch of weeks? It's about these four people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the central character is a kind of central character, and that's Frances, character played by Alison Oliver. But yes, that is what we're going to see. We're going to watch Alison's character, Frances, kind of journey through this complex web of relationships. Her best friend and ex-lover, Bobby, this couple, Melissa and Nick, who are that little bit older and a bit more established. And it's about a relationship forming between her and Nick and what that does to the group as a whole.
Okay, and just one last one, like, not to give someone anything away as such, but does it seem to be nothing much at first, a bit of a flirtation? Does it take time to become more than that? Is that it?
Yeah, it takes time to become more than that. And initially, like, Frances and Nick are the two sort of introverted characters, if you want to say that, of the quartet. The other two are the noisier, more kind of like vivid characters. And it's like these two quiet people kind of notice each other over the first two episodes, and then gradually that blossoms into something else.
Okay, as you know, when anybody reads a book, they are their own film director. They're making their own movie, obviously, or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't have to be called a movie, but you know what I mean. So much is kind of nuanced, subtleties, etc. So I imagine a lot of gestures and looks and all that kind of thing. You have to do that in terms of getting that kind of thing, reaction shots, etc., with the camera. Does it take a lot of time? I mean, with all due respect, Frances is not like, she hasn't done 100 movies. I mean, sorry, the character of Frances, Alison. So, I mean, the point of it is, do you have to kind of say, no, I'd rather you look this way or that way, or arch your eyebrow?
No, with really good actors, and she is just straight out of the gate, an incredible actor. You try not to micro-direct like that. Working with kids, you sometimes do, or with less experienced, or not even experienced, less kind of, I suppose, naturally gifted actors, you maybe do, but you're trying to talk at a level like where you can say a few small things which help unlock a scene rather than kind of micro directing. But what you are doing yourself, like, you know, yourself and in this case with Susie Lavelle, the DP, is watching really closely to feel what's happening and making sure that all that nuance and detail is there. And if it's not, sharing with the actors what you feel might be missing. But, you know, it's rare enough that you tell somebody what to do in that kind of, you know, you block the scene and you rehearse it and you talk about what's happening and you shift like the tone and you do all of those things. But like Alison's kind of repertoire of gesture and facial expression for Frances was there right from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And that was the most exciting thing for us.
And one of the things also was that she knew the books very well. She knows the Sally Rooney books, and that really helped her. Sometimes people say, I never want to read a book because I'll just mess up, but I can see where it really would help here. But like, I mean, in terms of, like, we mostly see things through Frances in the book. You did all this in Belfast, Dublin, Croatia. I would get the impression that the pandemic might have been good for you a lot. It kind of, you were a group.
Yeah, like, you know, it has its massive negatives, obviously, in terms of, I mean, it has its massive negatives globally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, even in terms of the work, it's tricky enough, you know, you'd be masked a lot of the time and, you know, dealing with, you're all in different cohorts and different colored wristbands and, you know, it's a lot of stuff to add to the general intensity of a normal shoot. But the good thing was, I suppose, that it was just us. You know, when we were in Belfast, especially initially, everything was just closed, you know, there was nothing. And then back in Dublin, similarly, like life is kind of frozen. So you're moving through it as a kind of group. And that does help. I think particularly for the actors, like that quartet spent a lot of time together. They really did get to be friends. They really bonded. And that was very positive. And also, oddly enough, like filming sometimes in places where with the crowds, it would have been impossible. So we sort of had streets and places to ourselves, at least for a lot of the shoot.
Okay, well, you are Oscar nominated, as everybody knows, for Room. And in fact, Best Actress went to the actress in that, Brie Larson. But in terms of what happened with Normal People, I mean, obviously you couldn't have been prepared. You had no idea this would happen. It is the biggest success in the history of modern BBC, amongst 1,000 other things as well, you know. And in fact, as it celebrates its 100 years this year, it's not a bad time to be the biggest success. But Normal People went through that roof. It became memes, it became everything. I mean, like the necklace, for crying out loud.
I know.
It has its own, you know, WhatsApp.
Instagram. Like, Yeah, it is. I've struggled to describe that because it all happened at the very height of the first lockdown. And so we were all sitting at home with our devices, you know, going, this is mad. This is absolutely mad, because, you know, you imagine what it might be like for something to really lift off. And like Room was obviously, you know, a big success and critically a big success. But like, there's no comparison to the sort of just numbers even of people who were watching normal people and then talking about it. I'll have to try and write it down sometime, because I'm glad I've experienced it, because, you know, you'd always want to know, what would that be like? And we kind of got to go through it, albeit in these kind of odd lockdown circumstances. But yeah, like, I just remember seeing the numbers, and then every time I remember on the morning of like the third or fourth day after it was released, waking up and reading stuff and actually saying to my wife, do you know, I actually for a moment wondered whether this might be a dream, not because it was like some massive wish fulfillment, you know, it's all, you know, I've spent my life wanting to have a hit or anything like that. More like, is this actually real or am I dreaming it? Because every time I press a button on my machine or go and look at another newspaper, or it all seems to be about normal people. It doesn't feel like this could be real.
Funny, you mentioned your wife there and a dream and not being real. I mean, I know that the ultimate accolade for somebody like yourself is talk to Joe, and you got there for a whole week. But the point about it is, did she listen? And a serious question about this, like, did she listen and think like, sorry, what is going on? What country am I in here?
Yes,
I mean, like, this is like, your story is from a new contemporary Ireland, as is this one here too. And it's fantastic to see that without the big hand of the Catholic Church getting in the way on any level. But she must have thought, like, are we living in the dark ages?
Well, I'll tell you what, because so she's from Poland and she's been living here for nearly 20 years, right? And I had always thought, talk to her about my childhood and talk to her about growing up in Ireland and about, you know, because she was always saying, God, it's great to be in Ireland. It's so liberal and open and you know, and it's so different to the way Poland is going. And I would always say to her, you know, this is not what it was always like. And I described to her what like Ireland of the like early 80s was like, for example, you know. And I could tell she didn't really believe me. She thought I was exaggerating for effect. So when the Joe Duffy thing happened and I dragged her into the radio and I sat her down and she listened to it, it was like I could see the scales falling from her eyes, you know. And the difference was, I suppose, I said, look, this is the reason why everybody can oddly enjoy this moment is because it feels like the last gasp of something. It doesn't, it's not something that affects people's lives in the way that it did then. But if you can imagine that this Joe Duffy show would have been absolutely wouldn't have raised an eyebrow, because that's what that's the way a tremendous number of people felt at that point, and certainly the way in which the society was kind of primed to think. And I think one of the reasons I was drawn to do both these projects was just, for me, reading the books was so refreshing and thinking, God, look, these are young Irish people unencumbered by the stuff that like you and I would have felt much as teenagers and young people. And just what a joy it is to feel like there are still lots of problems. People still have all of the same kind of issues about growing up, but they don't have the added kind of massive guilt and shadow of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're right. I mean, I just think you make porno movies. Okay, let's. I know that Sally Rooney wasn't on the set for this one and might have been for normal people, not 100% sure. But do you think in any way at all that Frances is Sally to a point, and maybe the female character of Normal People is Sally to a point?
Well, interesting. Sally herself said that she feels that both Connell and Frances, Connell and Marianne are like two halves of her going to Dublin to college, right? And I can really see that. And I think, but I do think also, even though she doesn't write herself, there are definitely aspects of, you know, no writer is able to step away from themselves. And I think there are definitely, I feel like almost certain that there are aspects of Frances which are part of Sally. But Sally's a much more kind of gregarious, I think, in person than Frances is. But Frances does capture that like crushing self consciousness that I remember, and I think most younger people, most people remember from when they were at that age, that thing of knowing, you know, that you have something in you, but desperately not being able to get it out, and being constantly thinking about where you stand in the hierarchy of things, and not wanting to look like you care, and all of those things yeah. that go with being a young adult, you know. And so I can identify with Frances, even though, you know, I on the surface bear no relation to her, and I think audiences will as well, you know, because she's so ultimately so vulnerable, and yet she sort of yeah. so spiky at the same time.
Yeah, but also there's the thing about students, isn't there, that like there's often an element of thinking they know it all, and they don't, and there's so much more growing up to do.
Yeah, and part of that's what's lovely about the story. Part of this is Frances realizing that she really doesn't know it all, and kind of like the way I feel about it is, like, if I've learned anything, like simple lessons about life, is that it is a much happier and more healthy place to be if you're looking out at other people,
right,
and thinking about other people, and being prepared to like find the meaning of your days in loving people and caring about them and having them love you, right? That's much healthier than looking inwards and analyzing yourself all the time. Yeah. And I think she recognizes that over the course of the 12.
And do you find it great that Sally's writing is very confident and very thrilling, a certain kind of style, like figurative language isn't exactly at the top of the list?
Yeah, what's amazing about her is that there's no kind of self-conscious literary flourish. There's a kind of directness in her voice. You're absolutely right. And that's what I loved about it. And I think, like, there's a sort of affinity in the way that I maybe make films, in that I like to hide the mechanics. I like to hide the work that's doing, the emotional work that's been done to the audience. I like it to feel very straightforward, and if you are moved and you do feel connected, it's more powerful for me if you don't quite know how that happened. And I feel the same way with Sally's writing. When I read her novels the first time, it was like, this seems really simple and direct, and yet it's having quite an effect on me.
I mean, the funny thing is that, like, you know, when you think of Frances's relationship and what happens in this movie and where it goes, do you think, like, oh my God, have I become a cliche? I mean, is that there? I've seen it in the book, but I'm wondering if you do that, like, in terms of, like, she's not kind of repulsed by all these feelings that are coming out, but she's slightly humiliated.
Say that again, Dave, because I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, like she doesn't, like she's thinking, oh my God, I've become a bloody cliche, you know, like we sleep together. But I mean, I'm only doing it ironically. No, you're not, actually, Frances.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. You know, she tries to construe things in a certain way that's hard for her to do. And she realizes in the end, no, I've just fallen in love, and all of these things are way less kind of about the intellect and way more about just the kind of heart than she would want to think, you know, thinking of herself as a sophisticated kind of intellectual. She comes up against the kind of realities of just human relationships and their messiness.
Well, then just one or two last bits, like she does ignore the truth of kind of having so little control over herself. But do you think she likes having control over Nick and that takes its place?
Well, I do think at the beginning of the relationship, one of the things that allows her to kind of be more herself with Nick is the fact that he's in this particular place at the beginning of the story where he's more passive.
Yeah.
And so it's like the two of them are the shy ones in the room, you know, and they end up kind of looking over at each other, like going, oh yeah, you're watching from the outside here too. And because Nick is in this kind of, we learn why later, but in this quite kind of quiet and withdrawn space, it does allow her to experiment with her power over circumstances. You know, she's a person who doesn't feel like she has that. She feels that she sits back and Bobby, her friend, is the one with all the social like leverage, you know? And then suddenly she finds herself with this man who she can kind of, not so much manipulate, but kind of have a powerful effect on. And it's like she gets to flex her muscles in that regard. Maybe initially there's a negativity in that, but I think it allows her eventually to kind of go back out into the world. I think what I like about the novel is that the effects that these people have on each other are ultimately positive, you know?
Okay, well, finally then, I mean, like, do you think that Frances is really quite shocked at the fact that, wait a minute, like she sent, we see her in the first program sending the text saying, have you seen the trophy husband here?
Yes.
To Bobby, you know, like, you know, wow, look at this guy kind of. And then when she meets him pretty quick, she sees he's actually a quiet and tentative type and much more interesting than she thought.
Yes, I mean, that's it, exactly that. That she wants to write him off as a kind of, you know, she wants to write Melissa off as well, because Melissa's a successful writer. And despite Frances's kind of posturing, she's basically massively intimidated by her. And so, you know, then she sees this handsome husband that she's got, like, actor, and she thinks, oh yeah, it's just a eye candy, you know. And then she meets him and she realizes he's much more nuanced than that. And there's much more, he's much darker and there's much more light and shade. And she can't dismiss him. And that's quite, I think all of those things, when you're in that stage of being kind of self-absorbed, self-conscious young person, the more life comes along and smacks you around and goes, you have no idea what you're doing, and you, yeah, all your ideas are basically naive, that's the way you grow, you know? And certainly her relationship with him is one of the big engines of that.
Okay, well, listen, I really appreciate it, Lenny. Thanks so much for talking to us. Just with the Alison Oliver and Sasha Lane and Joe Alwyn and Jemima Kirk, did it take a long time? I mean, like, casting was everything, I'm sure.
Yes, it took a long time. Alison came very quickly. She was one of the first people to arrive from Louise Kiley, our casting director, via in a bunch of self-tapes, and she really stood out. But then it was about finding the others. And Sasha, I think, in a way, that part's the hardest to cast, because in the book, she's just a kind of a foil. That's not fair. She is a sort of she's seen from Frances's point of view, and we had to build out a kind of a character that we could look at separately. Really complicated character, Bobby. I think Sasha Lane does an incredible job with her. And then Joe came quite quickly as well, Joe Alwyn, because he just stood out as having this soulful quality, which made sense of that backstory of the character. And then Jemima, again, we looked far and wide to find somebody who is like, has enough zing to play that part and really intimidate somebody like Frances. Not in a cliched way of being kind of grand or anything, but just at the level of pure personal power, you know?
Okay, well, I've only seen the first couple of programs, but so far, so brilliant. So listen, Lenny, once again, thanks so much for talking with us, and the very best of luck with Conversations with Friends every Wednesday night, 9:30, 9:35 maybe, after the ad break on RT1. Two programs, and then you can catch up on the player if you haven't seen last week's. Thanks a million, Lenny. Good luck.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Fanning on 2FM.